For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
"Touchdown Notre Dame!"
or "Irish win."
He's in for a touchdown! The Irish have come from behind!
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, Ed Jordanic. Also joining us from ndnation.com, Mike Coffey. Well, fellas, we were a little prophetic in that we thought they'd struggle. Certainly, we'll give credit to Ed and let him start first on how, in God's name, he predicted this. But I get the feeling... first let me say this. Again, ND Nation is so typical of overhyping the first game. Everybody thought we were going to blow them out. Now that we've lost, the doomsdayers are out. You know, we're going to go 5-7 this year. But I'd argue that, Ed, maybe you're right again, that Notre Dame is capable of going into Michigan and beating them. And although I know at this very moment that doesn't seem like any chance whatsoever, but I did watch a little bit of Michigan State, and they don't scare me nearly as much as they did prior to the season starting. But being that you were the guy that correctly called this, we're going to give you the first shot at this. What's your take on the
well,
game?
Well, I'm distressed that I was right, but I was only right, well, two things. You know, I was just being a little bit of a contrarian, but also I was really uncomfortable with the expectations. You know, there wasn't kind of a discouraging word at all through camp. You know, everybody was going to be an All-American and everything was looking great. I didn't get the feeling that Kelly's endorsement of Crist was all that strong. And I think now we kind of see that because of this quick hook that we saw on Saturday, that it was a pretty close call to begin with. But I also think that the biggest thing is I think that I really thought that Skip would have his guys ready to go, and they were a really good football team. You know, there was a very Holtzian game. You know, the defense was opportunistic but not dominating for South Florida. They didn't make mistakes. They weren't intimidated at all, and I didn't think they would be because I knew their coach wouldn't be because he gets it, and people, you know, and the players would feed off of that. You know, just to kind of echo what you said, they will beat Michigan and they will beat Michigan State. I'm more convinced of it than ever. I mean, the things that they messed up, the reason that it feels so ugly today, in my opinion, is because it was kind of an amalgamation of the worst of the Davey Hamwise kind of things that we've come to see. And to tell you the truth, the turnovers and stuff were awful, and those have to be corrected, and I think they will be. But I'm more concerned about the stuff like, you know, it's still a close game. It's still a game that could be tied or won, and we've got to call a timeout before our two-point conversion play. You know, I mean, there might as well have been, you know, a sign on the message board at Notre Dame Stadium saying this timeout brought to you by the Bob Davey era. I mean, you know, it was just it was making me nuts. And you know, I can't believe that this is the tempo that Brian Kelly wants on offense. There's still way too much kind of standing and looking at the sidelines and getting stuff figured out. And, I think Tommy Reese will be the quarterback for this team because he gives us the best chance to win. And he's basically 4.5-0 as a quarterback. But there's, you know, there's still some stuff that's really got to be ironed out. Those little things that I think, you know, the turnovers, they'll get that fixed, but the, you know, some of this other stuff really has to get squared away. I think this is a BCS caliber team. I think we'll look back and be glad that we lost a game to another BCS team because I think South Florida, I don't know if they're going to run the table, but I think they'll finish, you know, they'll either win the Big East and go to a BCS game or they'll go 10-2 or not. You know, they're going to end up being a good thing to a good quote unquote loss to have on our schedule. So I still feel the same way. I'm upset that I was, you know, wrong.
Coffee, when did you think I think a lot of people think the turning point in the game was the fumble on the 1 yard line. For me, that really wasn't it, but when did you think to yourself, like, oh my God, I'm sick to my stomach, I think I see what's coming?
Well, I have to be watching that first drive, I was think I was thinking this is everything we asked for. This is a balanced offensive attack. This is fantastic execution. The offensive line was just picture perfect. Sierra Wood hitting the holes, and Dane Chris completing the passes and getting all the way down to the 1 yard line. Then yeah, I don't now the 1 yard line fumble may have been the turning point for the. For the team, because that seems to be when things started to get mentally loose. But the turning point for me was Theo Riddick fumbling the punt, and just such a huge, especially after the defense had made yet another stop, and all we need to do is get the ball back, and we can have another drive like that. And all of a sudden, the ball is not only is the ball on the turf, it's on the turf again at our 20. And we're putting the pressure on the defense yet again. I mean, you can't really. I mean, I know some people say, well, the defense failed when they really needed to get a stop. Well, by the time they really needed to get that stop, they had been called upon 4, 5, 6 times. I mean, you can't ask a defense not to yield a touchdown. That's not realistic, no matter who you're playing. I mean, if
right, especially when you're giving it over that deep in the territory.
Exactly. If you are asking your defense to pitch a shutout for you to have any chance of winning, you're not going to win.
Yeah,
you're right. My heart sank when the normally reliable shake that David Ruffer missed the 30-yard field goal.
Yeah, well, you called that one too, Ed. So there's a few more things that you called. And that one bothered me more than anything. I mean, a 30 yard chip shot is a chip shot, and man, that was the last thing I was expecting is him missing that one. That was a huge turning point in the second half, no doubt about it. But you know, for me, the biggest, and it kind of goes along with what you said, Ed, about the concern on the 2-point conversion. The other concern for me was. Because I thought before the game, man, if those first two series goes well for Dane Chris, then he's going to be fine. Well, obviously it didn't, not really to his fault. However, the series that bothered me was when it was 10-0, we're driving, he gets to 3rd-and-1, okay, and granted, this is a little bit of Kelly's fault too, because the whole entire offense is looking over to the sideline, and we were late getting the play in. But I'll be damned if he turns around and literally allows the clock to just run out without even looking up. Didn't even bother to look at the play clock. Was kind of surprised that all of a sudden flags come flying in. And now all of a sudden it's 3rd-and-6. And then he's got Michael Floyd wide open on the cut, and he just misses him. And, I mean, just misses him badly.
Well, that's what I think that Dane, you know, that's after that first drive, you know, when you're the leader, when you're the confident quarterback, when you're the guy that everybody's rallying behind, that's when you just kind of get in the huddle and say, listen, you know, we just did these guys in. You know, we just basically had a touchdown drive. Now let's go back to work, you know. And it just seemed like after that, he was shaken, you know, he was tentative, and that is just something that you usually don't have to worry about with Tommy. I mean, he doesn't get phased. I mean, the interception he threw after the second delay was god awful. I mean, you know, there were like 3 good options and he chose the 4th, which was the worst one. And that's what happens sometimes when you've got a guy like Michael Floyd, is you lock in on him and just out of just kind of reflex, you throw it in his direction no matter who's around him. So that was not good. But besides that, you know, he played well in a situation where he had one hand tied behind his back. I mean, he had to play catch up, so Sierra was kind of off the board. You know, so his stats in the second half, without really having an ability to have any sort of a balanced attack, makes me think that it's kind of a no-brainer call, because number one, it's about winning football games, and number two, it's about, you know, feeling like you've got somebody at the controls who's not going to get rattled. And unfortunately, Tommy wins that analysis right now.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that, Coffee? Do you think there's any chance whatsoever that Chris will actually get the nod again with the quick hook, or do you think he's
well? I have to say that the part of the whole thing that bothers me is an entire spring practice, which I realize Chris wasn't necessarily at 100% during, and then a whole fall practice. All of this analysis that resulted in him being named the starter seemingly was undone by 30 minutes of football. And I have to ask myself, what did the coaching staff see in those practices that that led them to make the decision? I mean, is Dane Crist one of those players who's fantastic in practice, but then put him at game speed and he just can't do it, versus Tommy Rees, who I think is better with the progressions? I think he makes better decisions, but doesn't necessarily have the tools to implement those decisions. I think if you took Tommy Rees's head and put it on Dane Crist's body, you'd have exactly the quarterback we need. I don't know what you'd... If you go back to Dane Crist now, you're really opening yourself up for second-guessing. I think, to be honest, I'm not even sure why they're saying, oh, we're going to evaluate. If it had been me, I would say, you know what, Tommy's our quarterback until he proves that he's not capable of doing it. Because I think flipping back and forth like this shows weakness, and that's not what you want to show to either your team or
your opponent. Don't want to do that. But I did like what Brian Kelly said, though. He said, look, up to this point, the decision was based on practices and leading up to the preseason. Now the decision is going to be more heavily based on film study of what each quarterback did during the game, the reads that they made, were they the right ones? And I think that's probably absolutely the right thing to do, because what you can do is you can dissect every single play. You know, I started watching the replay, and for the first time, I haven't done that in a while, because, you know, when it was good, I just left it, and when it was bad, I didn't want any part of it. But I went back and watched the replay, although my DVR stopped at the second delay, so I didn't even see the last 5 minutes. But I'll tell you what I did see. I did see some mistakes from Crist. There was another play where it was 3rd and 9, and he had Riddick
breaking
open
reads.
For the first down. And he made a bad read and threw it to Eifert in the flat, who had no chance whatsoever of getting the first down. And Kelly let him have it when he came off, and he's exactly right. And then the other one where, Eifert should have caught that ball, but you threw it behind him in his back pocket. Yeah. What are you doing? You're stepping up. It's not that hard of a throw. So, you look at the game film and you look at the situations and that, and I do think that after doing all that, it's probably going to be pretty tough for Kelly to go back to.
And, just from the physical aspects, I have a hard time still seeing Crist make that throw on Floyd's first touchdown catch. Tommy laid it right in there, the one kind of down the right. You know what I mean? Like, that was kind of a little bit more of a touch throw, kind of that medium range. And those are the ones that Crist really struggles with. And those are the scoring type throws. Those are the throws that turn into, you hit Eifert on a wheel route, or you hit these guys a little bit more of a touch throw. And so I think that he just kind of brings some things that that unfortunately Dane struggles with. I keep saying unfortunately, and that's all just based on the fact that he's obviously a popular guy, a good guy. He wants to win. He wants us to make this work more than probably we can even imagine. But if you're sitting in Brian Kelly's seat, it's all about production and all about W's, and I just don't think that's a real tough call right now.
No, but there is some unluck that went along with that. I mean, think about it.
Sure,
if Jonas
Gray
doesn't fumble and he puts it in, nobody is talking about any kind of switch whatsoever. Not only that, but we would have rolled these guys. I don't know that we would have won by 3 touchdowns. But I clearly think had we scored that first touchdown.
Well, listen, there's a lot of blame to go around. I mean, Michael Floyd's holding was unnecessary. There's the special teams. Theo Riddick's troubles. Listen, we can't let the defense kind of escape. Completely from this. They played a good game. But those late hits were just ridiculous. I mean, you can't have these guys who are veterans on your defense. They weren't close. They were bad, bad penalties. And that's another reason why South Florida won, is they just did not, they had a couple, they had a delay of game that gave a offside that gave us a first down on a field goal attempt. And they had a couple kind of mistakes that could have been critical in a game where we were closer at that time. But they just didn't have the really big glaring errors that we had, and that was the difference.
Coffee, let's get your take on this, because you haven't said anything yet. But now that you've seen the game and you've seen the situation that played out, what are your thoughts over the next two games? I mean, we got to go to Michigan at home for them, a night game. That place is going to be absolutely jacked. Where do you see things going?
Well, I watched part of the I was flipping back and forth like during the delays and whatnot to the Western Michigan game, and Michigan didn't necessarily look all that scary, but you have Denard Robinson, who is BJ Daniels' redux. And if we had problems containing Daniels before he tweaked his hammy again, then we're really going to have problems with Robinson. I think it's really going to put a lot of pressure on the front seven not to let containment go. And as many times as in the first half when B.J. Daniels is able to get outside the containment, that's going to kill us next week if we can't do that. Now, Michigan's defense didn't scare me very much. So looking at I'm thinking it's going to be a high-scoring game. Now, whether we can outscore them, that remains to be seen. I mean, a night game up in Michigan Stadium, like you said, is going to be tough. And I know Michigan State had a hard time in their first game, but you know, it's a first game. I'd like to see what they do next week before I start having any level of confidence about playing them at our place.
You know, one last thing I wanted to ask you guys about, because I was thinking this during the game. I mean, there's a reason that Florida State plays Louisiana Monroe and Nebraska plays Chattanooga, which I didn't even know was a Division I program. But you know, you look at these guys in Florida playing
Atlantic,
whoever that
cupcake
was.
And,
yeah, and you know, and Ohio State playing in Akron. There is something to be said. Brian Kelly kind of vaguely referred to it, but the fact of the matter is a lot of these big time programs schedule an automatic win in week one simply to avoid this exact situation. I mean, is this something that Notre Dame really needs to seriously consider, or is that just something that they're never going to do?
I just don't think it's an option, purely because it's just a, you know, it's a scheduling thing, and it's only going to get worse. You know, if there are super conferences, I mean, that's a whole nother show, but Notre Dame schedules teams for a variety of reasons. You know, geography, relationships, you know, recruiting, you know, donor dollars. I mean, you know, it's not quite as cut and dried, I think, as it is at a conference school who basically has three slots to allocate every year and can be very strategic about, you know, what they're going to do. I mean, think about it. If you're an SEC team, you know, why would you, you know, and you think you've got a chance for a national championship, you know, why wouldn't you get your feet wet against a cupcake in the weeks one and two and see if you can get away with it, you know, and maybe your third non-conference game is a little bit of a middle market, you know, team, or maybe an upper, you know what I mean? Like, why? So I just think it's a whole different game for Notre Dame. And you're right. Would you rather have played Wake yesterday in South Florida in November?
Absolutely.
So I don't know. I don't think I think it's just a tough equation. And I don't know how this game, particular game, it'd be interesting to know the history of how this particular game came about. Obviously it was scheduled long before Skip Holtz got the job. But it was, you know, it was you know, I can't remember if it was a substitute for some other series or what the, you know, what the issue was. But it's, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. You play who's on the you know, and without five turnovers,
right. I mean,
we'd be sitting here saying,
it.
Geez, how smart were they to schedule a quality team as a good warm-up game, and we spanked them pretty good.
Yep. No, that's exactly
well, I
right.
think part of it also is, well, I think the reason we played South Florida was this was a result of the Kevin White, let's play three or four Big East teams every year mantra. So I think that's how it originally came about. But one thing I would like to see the NCAA tell schools, okay, you know what, you can play one preseason game that doesn't count, like the last weekend in August or whatever. If you want to play a Chattanooga or a body bag team, let's say, okay, you can play one and it's not going to count. And then teams can do whatever they want for that practice game. And then you're not dirtying your schedule up with these just body bag games that really don't... I mean, when you're a team like Ohio State, where you're trying to get tickets to hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of alumni, and you want to have a game, and they'll be happy to get a game like that, okay, fine. But I think ND fans, by and large, really aren't going to respond well to games against the Chattanoogas of the world. I think Notre Dame is one of two or three schools who have never played never played an opponent of that level. I kind of like that.
Yeah, me too.
And I would really hate to see that stop, because we need something to warm. If we need something to warm up on, then everyone needs something to warm up on. So why don't we do it at an NCAA level? Why not say, hey, you guys, if you want to play a body bag game, play it the last weekend in August, and it doesn't count. That's what basketball does. Basketball has two preseason games, and Notre Dame plays two really small Catholic schools. Like this year, they're playing St. Xavier University, which is right down the street from me, and I can tell you that the people at Zavs are thrilled to be able to play at Notre Dame, but the beauty is we can get that game in and not have it count on and kill our strength of schedule or anything like that. We can get the warm-up we need without really making a mockery of the contest, and I really think that's what the NCAA needs to do.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they do that. Well, let's leave it there. Hopefully Notre Dame fans will side with Ed and pray that he's 3-0 after the first three
games. Hey, one last thing that we noticed in the stadium. For anybody who goes to Notre Dame games for a while, if you hear Mike Collins say, "Usher 800, please report to security," you can be sure that we're just about to be evacuated from the stadium. That's the code.
That's the first time that guy's been called. We cracked the code
because it happened right before the first evacuation, and then he came on and said the same thing right before the second evacuation. So apparently, maybe they'll change it up now, but that on Saturday at least, that was the code for ushers get ready. We're going to start getting people out of here. So it was a long day.
Man, that was a strange occurrence. Yeah,
people forget that it was about 96 degrees in the parking lot. From 11 a.m. until game time, until well into the first half, before it started to the sky started to darken. So it was just a crazy day all the way around.
Wow. All right, well, let's hope for some better days ahead for Notre Dame fans. We'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanik and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.